this podcast, I would like to talk about miracles. And I hope that in sharing these miracles, that firstly, that it doesn't sound like I'm bragging, because I'm aware that the miracles never come from me. They come through me, or maybe they come through other people, but they don't come from me. You know, I'm a conduit for things, but they don't come from me. But I'd like to share these stories because they're three or four miracles that I've experienced. I've had a lot of miracles, but I wanted to share these three or four miracles. The first one was when I was on tour. I did a 32 city tour of Britain, publicising my book Watch My Back. And I knew that every shop I went to, we went to about 60 shops, I think, in the end, and I talked to all the shops. I knew that every shop I went to, there would be someone there I'm supposed to meet, somebody that I'm supposed to be introduced to, a divine introduction, divine networking. So everywhere we went, I'd say to Sharon, I wonder who we're meant to meet today. I wonder who we're meant to serve. And of course, the people you serve, it's reciprocal. They serve you in some way or another. They serve you. It's always reciprocal, otherwise it doesn't work. So this particular time, we turn up at a shop in Leicester, and I'm doing a talk, and there's an older guy there with a young guy, and the young guy's on crutches, and he's in black long clothes, and he's dressed like a goth, he's got long hair, and he can't stand up for more than a few minutes at a time, he's got an illness. After I do the talk, his dad introduces me to this lad and says, oh, he's a fan of your books and he just wanted to come over to listen to your talk. He said he's got this debilitating illness. He's probably going to end up in a wheelchair. The lad looked very depressed and very down. He said the doctors have given up on him, but we don't know what to do with him. He was a martial arts guy. He was already got a black belt in karate. But he's got this illness and his bones were crumbling in a very bad way. But when I met him, I just knew. And I said to him, would you like to get back on the mat again? And he looked at his dad and his dad said, no, you don't understand. He'll never be back on the mat. He can never be back on the mat. And so that's never going to happen. He's got this illness. They can't cure it. The doctors don't know what to do with it. And I just said to him, would you like to get back on the mat? And he nodded. And I said, listen, I've got a Thursday class. Why don't you come along to the Thursday class and just join in with the lads and just see what happens. Just sit and watch. So we came along. We had a Thursday class. It was a free class, just a select group of people. It was a class where miracles happened. And this lad just sat and watched. And he sat and watched. And he sat and watched. And then afterwards, we'd go and have a cup of tea. And we'd have a cake or a biscuit and we'd talk. So a lot of the stuff went on afterwards as well. There was no sense of me teaching this lad. There was nothing for me to teach him. It was just about placing him somewhere in this kind of field of potential around some world-class fighters and letting him marinate, that's all. There was never a sense of actually teaching him, just about him being there. And there was never a sense of it coming from me. It was just about him being in that environment. And then very gradually, as the months went on, I encouraged him to come on the mat. And I just grabbed his hand one day and said, do you want to come on? He came on the mat. And he's not done any grappling, but from the very first time he came on the mat, you could feel his presence. He's very just got something about him, this lad. Then each month he started to come on a little bit more, and then he started his own forum about martial arts, and then he started to do a bit more training, and all of a sudden this lad that was couldn't stand up for more than a few minutes, suddenly this lad is now one of the top MMA fighters and trainers on the planet. He runs full-time schools. He's married to a beautiful woman. He's got short hair. He's very handsome and he's in fantastic shape. He's got his own place. He's an absolute miracle. This was just about me bringing him, following my intuition, bringing him into a group of potential and then watching him expand. And then once he'd kind of outgrew our group, he went off and trained with some of the best people in the world. He's self-taught, so he went off and just kind of dabbled and worked with lots of people. And he's just this miracle. And every single year, his dad, I love his dad, he rings me up and we chat about the miracle that is his son. There was another occasion when there was another lad came and approached me at the gym, and this lad had a personal space of about 2 miles. He couldn't come within, he couldn't really come within, you know, 5 yards of me without curling up. And he said, are you Jeff Thompson? I said, yeah. And he said, could I train with you? And I didn't really have a club at the time. I just had this little private club. So I just said, I haven't really got a club. And he told me a story. He'd had a breakdown. I think he tried to commit suicide. And he'd been diagnosed as schizophrenic. And I really felt a connection with him. I felt an intuition with him. So I said to him, look, come to the class. Why don't you come to the class? Just come to the class and see what happens. It's just a little private class I've got on a Thursday, just a few lads. We'd have a little training, we have a little cup of tea afterwards. So we came down, and he's the most beautiful man. So gentle and so inoffensive. He didn't want to be concussive, he didn't want to hurt anybody, so we didn't teach him to punch, he didn't teach him to kick, he wasn't interested in that. But fucking hell, he took to the grappling very quickly. And again, there was really not a sense of teaching, there was a sense of placing somebody in an environment, in a pool of potential, and then watching him expand. And in a very, very short time, this lad grew in confidence. This guy who was a schizophrenic, who had been labelled as a schizophrenic, had been, you know, been on the sick for years. He hadn't worked for a long time. He was in a difficult marriage. Most of his friends were depressive, and he was in quite a bad place. Suddenly put him around people like Matty, people like Lee Evans, people like Alan Peasland, people like Tony Summers. Put him around this potential of world-class fighters. And he just expanded again. He just expanded, and he became one of the top grapplers in our class. He'd become an amazing grappler. But as his confidence grew with the grappling, his confidence in life grew, and he just started to make changes in every aspect of his life. He ended up getting divorced. He ended up not changing his friends, but as he moved on, his friends didn't come with him. He got a whole new environment of friends. He actually even ended up becoming a nightclub doorman. And he had this kind of very soft voice. When he'd speak to me, we'd go, hello, Jeff. How are you, Jeff? And he said to me one day and said to me, I want to become a bouncer. And I said, well, my friend runs all the doors in Coventry. So I said, I'll put you in touch with him and you can talk to him. So I rang him up one day, this lad, and I said, listen, I rang him up to tell him that this guy was going to give him work. And when I rang him up, he went, hello. And I said to him, listen, put the phone down. I'm going to ring you back in 5 minutes. When I ring you back, fucking speak properly. Do not speak like that. I said, I'm going to put you in touch with the top guy in the city, and he's going to give you work. But if he hears you talking like that, he'll give you a slap. So I said, talk properly. I put the phone down and redialed it, rang him back, and he went, hello. So I lined him up with this guy. He ended up working on the doors. He ended up getting back to work. He ended up getting a new job. A new wife, he got married again, and he just was this fucking amazing grappler, an amazing athlete, and one of the gentlest men you'll ever meet. And he had no aspirations to trip the light fantastic. He had no aspirations to go out there and change the world. He just wanted to live a normal life. And by placing him in this pool, this environment, and at one point, even his doctor gave the, because he was on the dole at the time, he was on sick, even the doctor gave him a note for the sick to say that he needs to keep training at this club, because whatever it's doing, it's helping him. So he's no longer a schizophrenic. A lot of people might find that hard to believe, but this guy is not a schizophrenic. This guy is living an ordinary life. He has control of his internal monologues, or his internal monologue. He's married to a beautiful girl. And if you met him, he's the gentlest guy. And there was a funny story, actually, he was telling me, because he came into me one day and he goes, oh, Jeff, I feel really bad. He said, I broke somebody's arm last night. And he says, I feel really bad about it. I said, how did you break somebody's arm? He said, well, he said, this lad was, you know, it was like in his 30s. He said, oh, this guy in our street, he's a big guy. He said, he's been bullying me since we were at school. He said, and I always kind of keep out of his way, but he caught me one day. He caught me yesterday as I was walking down the street. And I ignore him, really. He said, but he grabbed hold of me and said, I heard you training with Jeff Thompson. He said, tell Jeff Thompson he's a wanker and I'm going to give him it as well. And he said, and when he started to insult you, he said, I just completely lost it. And I jumped on him and broke his arm. And this guy's never bullied him since, obviously, but it was just so protective of me, so protective of Matty, so protective of the whole group. A proper, proper nice man. But this is a guy, this was my second miracle, an amazing, amazing man. I want to stipulate this isn't coming from me, this is just came from placing him in this group of people that showed him his potential. Because when he's around ordinary people like me, like Matty, like Tony, he can't deny his potential. Because we're saying to him, oh, we're scared too. We're afraid too. We have internal voices as well. We just learn to channel it. We learn to do something with it. We're afraid too. It's okay to be afraid. Muhammad was afraid. You know, Arjuna was afraid. Christ was afraid. Everybody's afraid. It's just what you do with it. So this guy is now living a wonderful life because he's a miracle. Then there's another situation. Another guy rang me up. This was some time ago. And he said to me, he told me his name. He said, I'd like to come and train with you. And I said the same thing. I always say, I haven't got a club. I don't have a club. And he goes, oh, fucking hell, it's took me 2 years to ring you. It's took me 2 years to build up the courage to ring you. So I said, well, what's happened to you? And he told me a story. He said that he'd had a nervous breakdown. Dad also had a nervous breakdown, tried to commit suicide. And what had happened, he said, was that his brother-in-law used to come round his house, and still did, and he would come in, take over the house, kick off, be insulting to his wife and this lad's sister, my mate's wife, and then just piss off again. And said, my mate said, I would go up and lie in the bed and be awake all night thinking, I should have said this, I should have done that, I'm a coward, and to the point that he got ulcers, to the point that he didn't want to live. So he'd been bullied by one of his own family members, but to the point that he wanted to commit suicide. So I just said, well, look, I'll tell you what, come to the class. I've got this private class on Thursday. Just wander in and have a look and see what you think. And I just thought, this could be a complicated issue. We'll just bring him in and see what happens. So we'll bring him down, and he has a wrestle with a few of the lads. He wrestles with Matty and he wrestles with Lee. And he's only a young guy, and he's in great shape, and he's really strong. He's really strong. In fact, he's holding his own with people. And I just said to him, fucking hell, I said, you realise how strong you are? I said, you're really strong. I said, your brother-in-law doesn't know, you know, he doesn't know what he's up against. I said, you are very, very strong. He just said, oh, I've just got no confidence. He comes and he just walks all over me. So in my head, I'm thinking, it's probably going to take me a bit of time to try and build his confidence just enabling him to see that he's already got what he needs. He's already got the ability. He just needs to stand up for himself. So I don't think no more of it. I just say, keep coming. We'll keep working with you and see what happens. The next day he rings me and says, oh, after I got home, he says, my brother-in-law came round again. He said, he kicked off again. He says, I felt all this fear, but suddenly, he said, I felt myself grabbing him. He said, I pinned him on the floor and sat on him. He said, I didn't hurt him. I just sat on him. He said, and I pinned him to the floor. He said, and he said, my brother-in-law was screaming, I'm going to kill you, I'm going to do this, I'm going to shoot you, I'm going to cut your throat. And then he said, I just held him there. And then he started saying, look, get off me, let me go, or I'm going to kill you. I said, I just held him there. And then he started going, look, please let me go, I'll go out, I won't cause no more trouble. He said, in the end, he said, I held him so tightly that my brother-in-law started to weep. He started to cry. And he said, once he started to cry, he said, I let him up. He said, and he ran to the door crying and said, I'm going to kill you, I'm going to kill you. And he runs off. He said, and when he went out there, he felt this surge of fear. He thought, oh God, he's going to come back and kill me. Then he said, I thought to myself, well, if he comes back, I'll just do the same again. I'll pin him to the floor. I'll just hold him there. I don't have to hurt him. I'll just hold him there. He said, the next day, his brother-in-law came round and just said, I'm really sorry. I don't know why I've been such a bully. I'm ashamed of myself. Please forgive me. He said he completely fell apart because my friend actually turned into his fear. All of the three people I'm talking about all turned into the thing they were massively afraid of, the intercourse with it, and realised that by intercoursing with their fear, they were able to liberate themselves from their fear. And I saw this guy a few years later. He came to a book signing in Birmingham and he'd become a very, very successful businessman. He was running three businesses. He got this very happy relationship. He's in fantastic shape. And he just really found his own power. And he found his power. And the way he found his power through a miracle. But the miracle was really just him looking at the issue. So with all three of them, it's all actually saying, well, this is what you're terrified of, this here. Have a look at it. Turn into it. Get a bit closer to it. Embrace it. Intercourse with it. This is what I used to say to people. If you've got a fear, invite it in. Come in. Have a sit down. Have a cup of tea. How long do you want to stay? Do you want to stay the night? Do you want to sleep here? You know, there's my wife. You know, there's my family. You're welcome. Full acceptance, complete acceptance. When we fully accept the thing we fear most, it has no power over us at all. So there are three of the things that have happened over the years. So when people say to me, some things are just not possible, I don't believe that's true, because I've seen miracles. You know, we create this reality. This reality is a creation of this. If you imagine that you've got a massive amount of light coming through the filter that is you, and you are, if you imagine yourself as a piece of film, your reality will be the reality that you project will be according to what's on your film, what's on your core beliefs, you know, what's on your internal parent or superego. So if we want to change the reality, we have to change the cognition. So this light comes through our cognition, and if we want to change the reality out here, then we just need to change the cognition. Cognition can be changed. It can be changed. Our core beliefs can be changed. Our reality can be changed. I'm changing my reality all the time because I know I can. And it's not easy, because to change a reality, we have to be brave enough to turn into the things that we fear. You know, because when I was 11 or 12 and I was sexually abused by this teacher, my martial arts teacher, he implicitly told me that, you know, this is what he put on my film, on my core beliefs: no one can be trusted. Not even the people you love, especially the people you love. They can't be trusted. No one can be trusted. That was what the implicit suggestion was. So my core belief at that age was that no one could be trusted. So I ended up building up a physique and building up an armory and an ability to defend myself against a world that couldn't be trusted. But actually what he told me wasn't true. You know, maybe he felt that it was true for him, and the implicit suggestion felt very real for me. But with that, you know, if you imagine this divine light's coming through my core beliefs, this filter of core beliefs, and my core belief says the world cannot be trusted, that's the film that's projected onto the screen. So I created a life of tremendous fear and tremendous violence. I built nightclubs and pubs and clubs and bars, and, you know, and I created thousands of situations through that one negative filter. I was in thousands of violent situations, literally thousands. I couldn't go to a christening without getting into a fight. I was at a christening once and headbutted a guy down a flight of steel stairs, and everyone bought me a drink because that was the reality I was created. And I know I've said this before, but I said to my wife, isn't the world violent? Everywhere I go, there's violence. And my wife said, there's a common denominator here, Jeff. It's everywhere you go. And I recognised that I was projecting that from this negative filter. So I was able to retrace that line of reality back to where it's being projected from, and it was projected from a lie. I was able to break down that lie, disprove it, disable it, dissolve it, and now when I create through this light, I haven't been in violent situations for years and years and years, because that's not what I see. That's not the reality I see. Carlos Castaneda, when he was being trained by Don Juan Matos, Don Juan Matos says to him, your reality is one room in a house of 100 rooms. If you train with me, I can help you to change. I can help you to change those realities. I can help you to access those other 99 rooms. I can help you to get out of the house. And that's basically what I do when I do my sovereignty course, and, you know, when I do any kind of training with people, is I help them to change the film. And when they change the film, when you change the filter, you change the reality. So I just show them how to break down old beliefs, expand the core beliefs. This is what Yudhis Thir in the Mahabharata called expanding the second self and create a new reality. So be in no doubt that miracles are possible, because as Deepak Chopra says, we are the reality makers. We are the reality makers. Want a better reality? Then we can create a better reality.